हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 21, Chapter 84. Sri Narad Muni continued, "In this world, familiarity breeds contempt. For example, one who lives on the bank of the Ganges might travel to some other body of water to be purified." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that the next two verses show that not only Vasudeva is subject to this criticism, almost all of the people there do not know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord's awareness is never disturbed by time, by the creation and destruction of the universe, by changes in its own qualities or anything else, whether self-caused or external. But although the consciousness of the personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme One without a second, is never affected by material distress, by the reactions of material work, or by the constant flow of nature's modes, ordinary persons nonetheless think that the Lord is covered by his own creations of prana and other material elements, just as one may think that the sun is covered by clouds, snow, or an eclipse. So the idea is that you're here with the Lord, but you're not actually seeing him in that way. You know, here he's seeing as a family member. So on the material platform, that would be a fault. But on the spiritual platform, then it's not, because that's his relationship with the Lord. So one that should always take advantage of what you have. That's there, not that something else is there. It's just like you said to say, those who live on the banks of the Ganges might travel to some other body of water to be purified. They live there, but, you know, if they want to get religious and serious, they go somewhere else. So that's the difficulty.
And we say that the origin of criticism is ignorance?
Yes. It means you could say, at least on here on the material platform, it's ignorance. But the basic point is this: what's the fundament of that ignorance being that cause? What's the main point of ignorance?
I'm not servant of Krishna.
Yes. So the whole point is the real basis of criticism is not being connected to Krishna.
Yes.
But now the question comes is the criticism meant to bring you to Krishna? Or is it just something that we're expressing our dissatisfaction with something we feel is unrighteous? You know, or it's even more that the other person should get some difficulty from that. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is that finding that what fault is there in how one could be more Krishna conscious for the purpose of elevating the person, you know, without any of our own particular motive for ourselves. Right? Then that's its natural state. But as we see, is even that it's recommended that you just stick to those who you are responsible for. Because if you go outside of that, then people criticize. Even if you take care of those you're responsible for, people will criticize anyway because they have to criticize. But the point is that the position is to help them understand Krishna consciousness. So the whole thing is when it's all about justice and this and what's right and wrong and people's rights and all obligations, my rights, your obligations, you know, that kind of stuff. is political, it's not spiritual. You may be devotees, but that's the meaning of neophyte, is that they get involved in these things and may either forget Krishna, get involved, or actually even foolishly think that these are Krishna conscious. Right? Krishna conscious is remembering Krishna, doing things to please Krishna. That's what it is. It's not something else. And so all the secondary that we use, it all can be connected if we're using it to please Krishna. But if we're not using it to please Krishna, then it's not pleasing Krishna. That means we're interacting, we're valuing and interacting with Krishna as a particular aspect of his creation, a manifestation of his energies. So everything's representing him. Now let's say in this case we're working on right and wrong, or say justice or righteousness. Then in doing that, then we're worshiping him as that, as righteousness. Now, depending upon what is the right, the system of righteousness that we're defining, you know, what religious system we're using, and then how well we're following it, then Krishna will reciprocate in a positive or negative way. Does that make sense? You know, so if you have a system, it may be bogus, but you're strict in following your system, you'll get benefit for following your system. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the system is there. You're following it. You'll get that benefit that you follow the system, not what you from the system itself. The system itself is not bona fide, so you're going to get the reaction for using a bad system. But that you're committed to following a system and you're very strict about that, you'll get the benefit from that aspect. Does that make sense? You know, just like someone has a bogus system and they don't follow their system, then they'll get the reaction for both of those. Like that. So, yes?
My difficulty, also yesterday you mentioned that the qualities of the Vaishnava, Svarupa, and the Nasta Lakshana. So the difficulty is that bhakti is, it's an internal thing. We can't really see bhakti. But then karma jnana is how we evaluate, you know, everybody. Mm-hmm. It's vairagya, it's obvious, you know, karma, it's obvious, jnana, whether, you know, person has it or not. So we can't really understand who is, you know, who is bhakta, who's not bhakta, because even Srila Prabhupada, he mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita, many will come to Krishna consciousness for karma and jnana, not for real bhakti. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficulty for us, and even with our own selves, you know, whether it's bhakti or not, whether I just want to, you know, get position in this society, because it's actually much easier to get position in here than in outside world. You know, in outside, you really have to work hard. But here, you know, a few years, this, that, and, you know, it's there, actually.
You just have to have the attitude.
Yeah.
But that's Krishna's kindness, that he's making these opulences so easily available. But by the particular depth of the color of the grass is always deeper if you look somewhere else, from where you're standing. Then by that principle, then even though it is easier, the what is there is better, we still think it's something else. Like we'll be sitting here, let's say, like we've given the example, we're here in Mayapur, and we're thinking, oh, the facilities here aren't very good, they're so much better in the West. But I guarantee you, except for Ambarish Prabhu, there is no one that comes and visits here that has something materially better in the West. I guarantee you there's not one devotee, unless they're, you know, from a certain place where they have marble floors and they have servants. You know, they have so much light and air in their apartment. They just don't have those things. You walk out, it's a natural place rather than smog or, you know, or even worse, smog, right? You know, does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is that we think it's better there. We're here. We're in the best place there is in the universe. But we'll think, oh, it's better somewhere else. So, you know, so it's just a matter of being satisfied with what you have. So, like you said, is that when you're looking at something, you can only see it by its secondary features. Because the primary is the consciousness. So, therefore, from the activity that's being done, if it's a recommended activity or bona fide activity, you can't tell. But you can also look at the symptoms of that are there in the subtle forms, you know, in the attitude, in the moods, the qualities and character that's going on. Because those are also, even though they're secondary, they're subtle. And then from that you can see, are they relaxed? Are they comfortable? Are they, you know, can you get symptoms of them being unattached? You know, and these kind of things. Then you can start to tell there. But that's also the reason why we, as a general rule, don't judge others. Because we can't necessarily tell. So unless you're in a more advanced stage, you can't tell. Right? Means you may see symptoms that if someone wasn't so advanced, it would be a problem. But they also might be there in someone who's advanced. You know, like Bhima happens to get upset and angry. You know, and it's very obvious. You know, it's like how he took care of, you know, Baka, or who was the wrestler?
Jarasandha.
No, that's the, he's a king. He wrestled with him. With a K.
Kichaka.
You know, they basically got the same kind of treatment. You know, he defeats them, he kills them, and then he kicks them until all their arms and head and legs go inside their body. And then he puts it out for display. Right? So then, you know, and he did that with both of them. So then you could say, this is not, but the point is what's the position that is there, the offense that's there to Vaishnavas, all these, to set that example that don't mess with Vaishnavas. You know what I'm saying? You know, Baka's going to disturb this whole village. He's going to eat his own, you know, all these people, these nice Brahmins and everybody else. So he's not discriminating. He deserves to be killed and then an example made. Because after that, those Rakshasas from that area, they didn't bother anybody. In fact, he said, you know, and if he heard, you know, because as kings you hear through the grapevine, you have your spies, you have your methods that, you know, Rakshasas are eating people over in Ekachakra, he would have come over there and killed them all, even though he's on the other side of India. Right? Because he says, so by doing that is there, by putting Kichika up there, then it sets the example. Don't mess with Draupadi. You know, because you're not supposed to. She's a married woman, and that you're not supposed to bother her. And she's even given the warning that, you know, I have 5 Gandhara husbands, and so no one should bother me because they're very, very aggressive when it comes to her. You know, so just as a warning to them for their own welfare, then, you know, be careful. But he, because of pride, so that, you know, that pride is not a value. So then him and all of his associates then were all killed. So therefore, even though, so the general principle is you try not to judge the individual in that. You can make sometimes judgments if it's an area of you're having to deal with or someone else's and you're giving an example about the way that it's worked, how you apply it. But you generally avoid the person themselves. You know, just like with Prabhupada, it was some devotees were bringing up some of the, you know, local gurus who were not considered properly sampradaya. So Prabhupada's point was, don't bring them up. You can discuss the philosophy. You can find the fault in the philosophy because people are going to follow the philosophy in their own life. What they've given is wrong. They'll follow it. Their life will be wrong. You know, so what's the reason that they're doing it? That's another thing. That's not our discussion. But following that is not what we do. So then you look at, okay, they're following something. Is that something how I would do or I should be doing? You know, and if it's in the same area and you can see something, then you can improve your own by seeing faults in what they do and the reactions that come. Does that make sense? But the devotional then, unless one's responsible or, you know, has some connection, one doesn't need to take it that far. So it's not important for our own. we're seeing here than the acharyas are giving, but in a way so that we see what the fault is and how to adjust it. But it's not about the person, right? As we can see, for example, is then someone like Bali Maharaj, and then all that he's doing, but then because of his connection to the Lord, he's the next Indra, right? But as you were saying, if it came down to a group of us was deciding whether Bali Maharaj should be the king of Indra, king of heaven, we might not allow it because, you know, he went in there and he took over and he did this and he's supposed to be down there. Why can't he be satisfied with what he does, this and that? You know, so just to set an example, then he shouldn't be allowed, right? No? Yeah. So like that. Or even a nicer, better example, you know, more extreme is Drona's son, Ashwatthama. Would we allow him to be the next Vyas? You know, not a chance. But he's going to be the next Vyas. Because he's done something wrong, you correct that, then you're fine. But we take it that the thing, it's my situation's eternal, like was saying before, Krishna was pointing out. We think our body, our relationships, the family, our money, it's all eternal. It's forever. It's ours, rather than it's borrowed. And so, therefore, we think punishment should be eternal. And so, even if somebody corrects themselves, it doesn't matter because in the mode of ignorance, we look at the past, not the present. So that's why one has to be very careful about applying it, because unless one can at least apply it in goodness, then it's not going to work nicely. And if you apply it in pure goodness, then that's where it's going to work very well. So therefore, it's just a matter of, I have my position, my duties, and if someone else's, I can look at that to get inspiration how I should do it more properly. Either they're doing it properly and I can get inspired, or they're doing the same thing but wrong, and then they get a bad reaction, so I'm inspired to do the proper thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. And that's also then, you know, from your first statement, why it's mentioned, it's recommended to come up with a platform of, at least in the neophyte stage, to a jnani. Because the jigyasu, it's about jnana, and the artartarti, it's about karma. And so then, those should be given up for actually just wanting to know the Lord. You know, understand our relationship with the Lord, be situated, connected with the Lord. So, and then that position is strong. Even as a neophyte, it's still a strong position. But the other two, then as a starting point, are fine. So when you say that people come because of this, that's how probably most people will come. But having come like that doesn't mean that you stay like that. Right? Just because you're like doesn't mean that you leave it that way. Does that make sense? You know, that's the whole thing, is that you do improve it. Not that, oh, it's like this now, it should stay like this forever. No, the natural thing is to improve. Everything improves. Like money, would we consider it normal that it just stays the same, or should improve? And generally, what does happen with our money? It gets less, right? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. It improves. So therefore, the situation you're in, it should improve. So if you're chanting, you're following the process, it will improve. So we have to look at that. What's going on now, how it's improving, rather than what happened in the past. Because otherwise, that's very unprogressive.
Maharaj, about going to the different holy places.
Going to the holy places.
Sometimes it's mentioned like that if you are in a holy place, like no need, but also sometimes recommended to go to holy places. Srila Prabhupada used to take the disciples and...
Yes, no, but I'm saying, what's the point? How to understand the two. Because the point is when you're in Mayapur, you're taking advantage of being in Mayapur. And then you're taking advantage, you're bathing in the Ganga, you know, you're offering obeisances to the Dham, you're appreciating the Dham, you're trying to do something for the Dham. You're taking advantage of the deity worship here and the association here, and then you're expanding on that by there's an opportunity to be with devotees and go to these other places. You don't need to go to those other places to be purified. You go to these other places because there's something happening with devotees. Like Prabhupada wasn't just say go out to these places. otherwise then why the Gokara, you know, verse? Is that you're going these because you're going to take advantage of the association. You know what I'm saying? You go to Vrindavan because of the parikram, not for the parikram, but because this leading devotee is having a program. So that means there's going to be discussions about Krishna, kirtan about Krishna, and at the same time you're in the dham getting the benefit of there. But you can get that same benefit being here. You know what I'm saying? But if we don't take advantage here and think, yeah, only when I go to Vrindavan that I can really appreciate and this and that, then that's the familiarity. Like I know a few, I made Padmalochan before, bathed every day, I think, or maybe even twice a day, but at least once a day, every day in the Ganga, for years. Like that, you know, because he could go. And then, and you'd see the change, you'd see the effect, he took advantage of being in the Ganga. Like that. I think Durgama does that also. Yeah, the Italian, very, very kind of, very shy, very humble, he takes... goes every day. Like this, go. You take advantage of what's here. Some aspect of the Dham Seva, the advantage of being here. You know, doing more service. Just like an Ekadasi, you chant more because you get more benefit. So you're in the Dham, you try to do more to get that benefit. So if that's there and then you expand that, that's fine. What it's talking about here is being in the Dham, not taking advantage, and think that only when I go somewhere else, then I'll get some benefit. Duryodhana is a pure devotee. I haven't come across it, but next Vyasadeva, yeah. But that doesn't mean he's a pure devotee, it just means he's qualified from it. But Duryodhana I've never heard anywhere that he's a pure devotee.
I think Garjasamhita is mentioned that he is associate of Lord Balaram.
He's an associate of Lord Balaram.
And he came to assist in his pastime to play the negative
role. Okay, to play the negative role. Okay, so then there you have it. Garjasamhita. He's come to be the bad guy. Like Jaya and Vijaya, they come to be the bad guy, so he came to be the bad guy. So otherwise, who could be that bad all the time? You know, it's just like, you know, you have a bad guy, sometimes he's bad, sometimes he's not, but let's say you're doing like a drama, then it's very common that the guys who are always good like to play the bad guy, and then they're so bad all the time. Like that. So the best bad guys would be good guys being bad guys. Okay? But for the pastime, that's not brought out. Because otherwise, then the knowledge ruins the rasa. Like that. It's known that it's, because otherwise you could say, how is this happening? Because it's a pastime, but it's dealing with it as it unfolds, how it happens. How he deals and how they respond, all that. So it's about the taste and doing everything connected to Krishna. Yeah? Yes, so Krishna therefore is unaffected by all these different things because he's beyond. Right? It's a common misconception, basis of so many improper philosophies, is that how Brahman can't be the origin because otherwise he'd be contaminated, so he has to be aloof. Right? Even religionists, many times you see they deify God because he can't, otherwise all the problems would go on him. So they just say, you know, he's separate from it. They don't understand, yes, he's separate, but at the same time he controls. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The sages then spoke again. O king, addressing Vasudeva while all... the sages then spoke again, O king, addressing Vasudeva while all the kings, along with Lord Achyuta and Lord Rama, listened. The sages said, it has been definitely concluded that work is counteracted by further work when one executes Vedic sacrifices as a means of worshipping Vishnu. The Lord of all sacrifices, with sincere faith. Learned scholars who see through the eye of Scripture have demonstrated that this is the easiest method of subduing the agitated mind and attaining liberation. And it is the sacred duty which brings joy to the heart. This is the most auspicious path for a religious householder of the twice-born orders, who selflessly worship the personality of Godhead with wealth honestly obtained. The BBT purport states, both Sridhar Swami and Srila Jiva Goswami here agree that the ritual karma of Vedic sacrifice is particularly meant for attached householders. Those who are already renounced in Krishna consciousness, like Vasudeva himself, need only cultivate their faith in the Lord's devotees, his deity form, his name, the remnants of his food and his teachings, as given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's all he needs to do. Right? And so then that criticism of how he takes things familiarly, because he's talking about how do I purify myself, he's with Krishna, but he's talking about what's this other, some other system. But the karma that he's doing is already service to Krishna. There is no material karma. So there is no need to purify that. He already has that. But at the same time, we'll see is to teach others, because he introduced himself as an attached householder. Therefore, then he's going to, you know, these things will happen.
Right, it seems that many associates of Krishna are so-called ignorance because of teaching for others.
That's there, but it's also just the natural form of the pastime, because we have to remember it's the interaction with the devotees that's the important thing. See, because it's just like this. Okay, why do something? Is there do you consider it a value doing something if it gives no experience? If it gives no good experience? Okay, so that means the experience we gain from an action, or from the results of action, that's actually what we're looking for. And also it means we may consider that the ongoing results of an activity, you do an activity, you like the activity, and so the feeling of being involved in it and it going properly.
Yes.
Right? So in other words, proper result, proper activity, proper knowledge, relationship, all these things may give taste, but the point is it's about giving taste. Right? So now, if we're talking about prema, then that's the taste we're looking for, right? So that's the reason Krishna interacts with the devotees with Krishna, is to express that prema. Okay? So now, that being a taste, how will you taste if there's no activity that's giving a result? Does that make sense? So there has to be there, and there has to be, and to perform an activity, you have to be properly situated in as yourself and in connection with everybody else and the environment.
Yes.
Right, because if you're the wrong person doing the wrong thing in the wrong place, it's just going to be wrong. Right? So, therefore, all these three features have to be in place. A result that's generated from an activity that's based on proper knowledge and relationship. Right? And then from that, you can generate the experience, which in this case we're discussing is prema. So to express prema, to increase prema, then there must be pastimes. And so in the pastimes, it's about the relationships that are going on in that pastime. Not specifically the facts. The fact may be that Duryodhana is a pure devotee, the devotee of Balaram. But that's not the point that's going on in the pastime. Everyone knows he's committed to Balaram. You know, it's his teacher and club. But beyond that, you don't really see that. You know what I'm saying? So there's some part. So then you take it as how the pastime is unfolding. Because we may say, oh, why do you need, oh, you can go be. But Krishna is beyond the rules. And beyond the rules means you're Atmarama. And Atmarama is nice. But Rasa is nicer. So it seems it's lower, but it gives the higher. That's the point. It's spiritual. On the material platform, we take it the other way. We take it that the abstract is the higher and the concrete is the lower. Because the abstract we call objective and the concrete we call subjective. So we reverse actually the point. Because you don't do anything unless you get a benefit for it. Like that. So in other words, even the most well-situated and respected, physicist, he's only involved in science because of the subjective experience he gets from being involved. You know, he'll say it's for science. No, it's for the taste, but it's for science. It's totally subjective. That's why anybody does that, any living entity. So that's the concrete reason. The reason things work in this world is because of that concrete aspect. Now, what you can do, how effective you are, depends on the abstract. You're the right person, right place, right time, performing the right activity, you can get the right results. But if you're not, it won't get. It doesn't matter what you say. And so that's the problem, is when the concrete that you say is, you know, what's important to you is not actually in connection with reality. Right? Are we ready for some, what do you call it? Are we all ready for some Warsaw Syndrome?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
The last day.
Huh?
The last
day. Last day. Okay. So, then, it's so subtle I got distracted. I don't know if I can find it. No, got the Jews and talking about what was the
scientist?
Yeah, the scientist, the thing that we're doing. Okay, and then whether it's right or not, because we can say is okay, we have the Vedic thing, you should follow that and that, but we also have a natural alternative sense. We would actually consider the Vedic to be an alternative, and we consider the modern societies to be the mainstream. Right? And so they all say that you can do this and be happy, and all these things are valuable. So why is that not equal, on equal par with the Vedic, if not even more important, because the Vedic is being an alternative because it's concluded as smaller. Even though there may be 1.2 billion Indians and only 350 million Americans, but you have to know is that you have to know the weightage of, you know, Americans are more obese than the Indians, therefore they weigh more. Like that, you know, so that's how you can tell. And they weigh more than anybody else, more than South Americans, more than Europeans. They just weigh the most. Of course, Samoans weigh more than them, but there's not so many of them. And Samoa is also under control of America, so they come in on that side. Right? Okay, so one could make that mistake. No? So, here's what's happening, is that, as we were discussing, is that you, means when you look at something and you're able to identify what it is. In other words, you look at something, you have to, there has to be some consciousness to be able to tell what something is. Because if you don't have any experience, you don't see it, you don't even know it's there, or you can't understand what it is. So unless there's some samskar, you can't even tell what you're looking at. Right? So that's the first aspect when you, pratyaksha, is to be able to remove the ignorance covering the thing that you can't tell what it is. Mm-hmm. Right? Then you seeing that, now your consciousness can take the form of that. Yes. You know, the form, the texture, the smell, whatever it is, the mind takes that. You know, it's just like, let's say, you bring up something, let's say you ate sometime before and it was really nice. You can actually see it, smell it, taste it, because that memory of that vritti or that experience is there in the mind. The mind's taken that form. You understand? So then, that then goes to the next stage, and then that combined with other memories and all that, then you get an impression. That's what is your samskar. Right? So based on this knowledge coming in from the mind, the form it takes, what is my previous experience, so how do I interpret that? Right? Does that make sense? So it's an ongoing thing, because you only notice what you already have some experience in. Right? And then from that, then you put that on, you overlay that on the vritti. The samskara onto the vritti, but then the vritti also transforms the samskara. So it creates a new samskara. So it might get better, it might get worse, or you might be more favorable or less, or... Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, now, what we've explained here is just the general mechanics. That's how it always works. Now you have the element, when you add on to that, goodness, passion, ignorance. What mode someone's working on. So if it's in goodness, then that means you're going to be basing things on Shastra. Therefore, you're going to be performing activities, you're going to be seeing things according to Shastra, Therefore, then your samskars and impressions are also going to be connected to samskar. I mean, to shastra. Maybe karma and jnana on the material platform, but it's shastra. So then your ability to interpret something what it is, because this brings us into the functions of the, you know, the intelligence, the mind, is that the first thing is that you can seeing something, you can actually understand what it is. So correct perception. Right? But you can also have incorrect perception. You know, the example given of the rope and the snake.
Yes. Yes.
I see a rope, I say it's a snake.
Yes.
Right? So that's incorrect. Because now in applying anuman onto what's there, I'm not getting it proper. I'm going through and using the imagination, but in doing so, I'm coming up with the wrong conclusion. Why would I be? Because then that means my memory and the samskars are improper. There's something about it, so there's some passion and ignorance. So passion and ignorance will always give you a wrong impression, wrong understanding. Even if you get facts right, you'll get something else wrong. Because that's what it's about, passion and ignorance. Ignorance means it's backwards from what it should be. Passion means it's all about what you're going to get from it. So you see something according to what you can get from it. Just like, let's say, something's going on and it's wrong, but you're getting a profit from it, you want it to go on. But if you're not getting a profit for it, then you want it to stop. Or if it's getting in the way of your profit, then you want it to stop. So it's all about what you're going to get from it. That's what will be passion. Goodness means what's proper and not. So only when someone's situated in goodness, then the samskars will be in goodness. Therefore, his whole consciousness and bringing things in, interpreting things, and that will be in goodness. So that would mean, then, if you're using a basis or impressions that are based on non-Vedic, there's always going to be passion and ignorance in them. Maybe there might be some aspect of being nice, giving and charity and all that has some element of goodness, but why are you doing that? Because it's the good thing to do because you want to be recognized for that, rather than that's what Shastra says. Because if we say, oh, Shastra says, then it's not I'm saying. You know, Shastra says, give in charity. Well, you know, this, that. But if I give in charity on my own volition, then I'm the good guy. And if Shastra says, and I follow it, then I'm just someone following the Veda. I may be a good guy following the Veda, but the important thing is, since our conditionings, I want to control and enjoy, it takes away my control. And because I'm supposed to do it, what's to enjoy? Does that make sense? So that's why you can't use the modern perspectives to actually understand and elevate yourself. You can use them as some examples and this and that. That's fine. We see that the acharyas use that all the time. But the point is it can't be the vision that you use. It can't be the basis. Does that make sense? So then you only have that you have to follow the shastras. And so what's given to us by authority, shabda, that's then what you try to apply through anuman to pratyaksha. But if I don't start with shabda, I start with pratyaksha, or start with what I've heard from others. You know what I'm saying? Like the modern social means what I've heard from others. Like I look on the internet, what's trending, what's going on, this and that. They're going to be saying, oh, this one's this, this one's that. Oh, is this guy really a good guy? He presents himself, but what's the real story? You know, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So they do on, that's their opinion. It has nothing to do with reality. Are you judging by a standard what's there? You're saying, oh, this is good or that. Who's decided that? Because the last campaign, there was a different standard. Go back 100 years, they're different again. So therefore, then, the whole standard that you're judging things by, you know, that what we said, that what's that? Miyate, that measurement, then is not shastra. It's imagination. And imagination then, with some scars coming from passion and ignorance, is always going to give a wrong understanding. You can't give a right understanding. Right? If people are doing things because they're supposed to and all that, then that aspect then can put the best effect onto it, even if it's not Vedic. But because there's the aspect of goodness. But it's goodness that makes it work. But when you have attachment and these things, those aren't goodness. You know, we're Westerners. We have to do it like that. That's attachment. It can't be. It won't work. Because if it was, then why aren't the Americans the most happy people on the planet? You know, I think the happiest place was not there. It was somewhere else.
Bangladesh.
Yeah, Bangladesh. They even, you know, how you say? And that would be the last place. Well, I mean, they might put, you know, Rwanda or somewhere else over in Africa is lower than that. But as far as places, they would not put Bangladesh. And what's one thing that goes on in Bangladesh that goes on more there than anywhere else in the world? Kirtan. Like that. So it's not strange that it's the happiest place.
And also helping together.
Yeah, yeah. You live on little islands, you have to. You know, otherwise the crocodile, the tiger will eat. Over there, tigers swim. So if you're on an island, doesn't matter. They'll swim over. Yeah, other places they don't like to swim. They'll do it if they have to. Down there, they're cool. They're Bengali cats. So does that make sense? So it wasn't such a strong Warsaw moment. Okay.
Nicely presented.
Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, so even though we are full with samskaras, infection, and ignorance, we can be established in goodness by following the Shastra?
Yes, as the main point is that we're following the bona fide spiritual authority in following spiritual practices. Because as far as our conditioning, there might not be enough goodness there to make any adjustments. So it's just by performing activities in pure goodness, then that purifies our conditioning up to goodness. Right? So there, if we don't work under authority, it won't work. So this idea of being independent, that doesn't work so good. So even you're applying, you're doing something on your own, but it's according to the order of higher authority. Like someone wasn't there telling Prabhupada what to do in America, but it was on higher authority that he's there and what he's doing. So
people who have passed out from this technology or those things.
They passed out from the technology.
I hate this all.
It's just that it was so much they just collapsed on the floor.
So,
you know, it's just the technology itself. The Java plus just was so much for their brain they just passed out.
They accept Krishna consciousness, but still they have that passion or ignorance. So because they also wants to connect, go for research and use the Shastra and to establish how Shastra is working in all levels and do research in those fields. But in the society what happens is to accommodate those people, it is either this or there is nothing, it is said, for them. So it becomes so tough for them. But still they want to be attached to Shastra and devotional service.
No, I don't understand what's the problem.
They are doing research.
Right.
I want to give the example.
But I'm just saying that where's the problem?
Problem is how, what they should do so that they can always be in Krishna conscious and connect.
But what would be the difference between them and, let's say, any householder? Right? They're using their particular technological area, in their occupation, and everybody else, all family people are using their knowledge to generate their maintenance. So what would be the difference? Because it's a matter of you see it for Krishna and all that, then that's how you connect it. So why is this unique and special? Why is it any different?
12 minutes, it is seen that, oh, that is, okay, they want to preach through, okay, like, through their research and all those things, then it is condemned,
but,
like that.
But why would it be condemned? What I'm just saying is that the point is you're connecting it to Krishna, what's the problem?
Because the authorities, they can't understand. They fear that other people also may go that side.
But then they have to explain what they're doing and how they're doing it. They have to understand themselves, because it's only through knowledge that things go smoothly. Because if they can't explain it, then they can't expect that the authorities will necessarily know what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is it, you can only work in that field in that way if you have the qualifications in that field. So you can't not just others will go there, because unless you have that particular degree, how are you going to work there? Right? But it still means they're following all their temple program and stuff like that.
Right? Yes.
The sages continued, an intelligent person should learn to renounce his desire for wealth by performing sacrifices and acts of charity. Right? Because this means his desire for wealth. Doesn't mean he has wealth. It means his desire for wealth. So if performing your duties, you have wealth, then you'll use that. But the way to get to the point where you give that up is through sacrifice and charity. Because they both require money, so then you're having to give it away without attachment. So that teaches you how to be detached from that. It doesn't say you don't have money. Generally, we would take it that you don't have money. No, it means that you have, like Yudhishthir, how much money does he have? Like that, yes, like practically unlimited, whatever. But is he attached to it? No. Or Sudama Brahmana? No. Or Bali Maharaj? Right? They all have more than Indra's got. And Indra is attached to what he has. And it causes him problems. But these others, we don't hear of them having problems from their day-to-day life. Right? For some reason. Because the problem means forgetting Krishna. Okay? So the point is they have, but it's a mentality, is not that they need. They have money. It's Yudhishthir. He has the whole kingdom, or he's out in the forest. He's still equipoised. He's still balancing Krishna consciousness. He should learn to renounce his desire for wife and children by experiencing family life. Right? Because you think that this will make you happy, but when you go through it, you find out that it's not as... In other words, he knows why the storybook ended where it ended. Like that. Yeah, why Romeo and Juliet such a classic. Yes. And he should learn to renounce his desires for promotion to a higher planet in his next life. O saintly Vasudeva, by studying the effects of time, self-controlled sages who have thus renounced their attachment to household life go to the forest to perform austerities. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, by offering various objects to the Lord by His mercy, one gives up desire for the objects. Right? So it's by His mercy. When you're offering them by His mercy, and you're able to give up that attachment by His mercy. Both are there. So that's the point, is that you're offering the objects that are important to you. That's why it says in the Nectar Devotion that when it's talking about things to offer to the Lord, then offering some item that you consider valuable, or foodstuff that you consider valuable, even if it's just a local regional thing, yes. You offer that to Krishna, then you become purified of your attachment to that. Right? The idea is that, oh, see, we can offer it so I can increase my attachment. No, it's actually meant for the opposite. That's why we have to approach things in goodness, not ignorance.
Yes.
Otherwise, we get the wrong, the opposite conclusion.
Yes.
Right? As one gives up desire for wealth by performing sacrifices whose actions expend wealth for the purpose of worshiping the Lord. So sacrifice means you're voluntary in giving up something for someone else's benefit. So that means the highest sacrifice then is sacrifice to the Lord. So doing those things that worship the Lord, then that is your best sacrifice. So that takes money. That takes facility. One gives up desire for wife and sons by household life with wife and children meant as worship the Lord. So therefore, one's engaging the family and yourself in the Lord's service. And all the activities that would be there that we consider household activities, those are then directed at the Lord. And so being directed at the Lord, you become purified. Just as you use your wealth in the Lord's service, family is used in the Lord, is engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? One should give up desire for selfish reasons for enjoyment in this life and the next at all opportunities, kalena, looking for opportunities to worship the Lord, using time for the Lord. So you're not looking that at any time. In other words, time is given to the Lord. So now I do things for the Lord. I look at things in the past in connection to the Lord. I look at the future in connection with the Lord. So that means giving up trying to enjoy now, right? Because that means you're not using time for Krishna, because time is activity. So I use the present moment to do things for Krishna. The future I will do for Krishna. So that means giving up the desire to go to the heavenly planets, because that's future.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Not, well, but when we get to heavenly planets, then we'll use it for Krishna. No. It means you give it up now.
This need to develop a lot of goodness and clarity.
Yes, it is. But the point is that the only benefit of the goodness is that it's much more direct and easy to use in Krishna's service. But goodness itself, compared to Krishna consciousness, it doesn't have any value. Within the material context, you can say, yes, it gives better material results, but none of those results benefit the living entity. They don't, you know, it's just like you're hungry and I come along with a gold coin, you know, say, here, you can eat this. No, I can't. Oh, okay. Well, and then you bring out one of those, little bars, 100 grams. Well, you can eat this one. No. Okay. Well, what about the 1 kilo one? No, I bring out the 30 kilo, block. So it's not that, I add on more that it gets better, because it has nothing for the soul. So that's the whole point that ultimately has to be seen, is there's nothing there for the soul. But we identify with it, so when we connect it to the Lord, it gets purified and we start to see. So the mode of goodness is only an advantage because we can see things more clearly. We don't become, because passion and ignorance are distracting to devotional service. Goodness is also, but it's the least distracting, and it's the easiest to engage. And so then engaging that to please Krishna, then it becomes pure goodness. Right? We don't want pure passion or pure ignorance. Right? Because generally those go in the opposite direction. But pure goodness then goes towards Krishna. So that makes sense. So that's why it's chosen. So we don't want to make a thing that it's all about goodness, situating yourself in goodness and that. That was a trend. What was that year? 81 or somewhere? I can't remember what it was. But there was a whole thing. There was a book out about it. And it was a big preaching for some years. All about, you have to situate yourself good. And that was the whole thing, is that you do that, then devotional service will go nice, rather than the only way we can get to that platform is by devotional service. So therefore, since it's a side effect of devotional service, focus on devotional service and be okay with the mode of goodness. Don't be attached to passion ignorance. So that's all we have to know, is to be not attached to passion ignorance. And favorable towards a situation of goodness. But our consciousness, we're trying to be engaged in pure goodness. Does that make sense? So we never take it off. We never get distracted. So, O Lord, Deva, or one should give up desires for enjoyment in this life and the next by spending time in worshiping the Lord, Deva. The person with discrimination should give up these desires. This means the wealthy household will not perfect hearing. It's the same spelling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Will not perfect hearing and other devotion. And other devotional processes properly by having a disturbed mind. Yeah. Guess the difference between the American and the British, what do you call it? Punctuation. As British, then you could put a comma after hearing. Then you know that that it's connected there. And then you will see, look at the context. But in the American, is that somehow you can work it out. You don't require it. But if you don't work it out, it doesn't work out. If the attached person suddenly gives up his house without destroying desires for the grihastha ashram, he cannot perfect hearing and meditation on the Lord. He will later give them up. Right? So that's the idea, is that it's grihastha life is for the purpose of engaging those things that you value in Krishna's service. And when you have that volume, that's called grihastha life. You know, when it's narrowed down to a few things, like, you know, how you say, your bag, your shoes, and your bowl, and some halava, then, you know, then it suddenly moves into a different ashram. Yes.
It means we engage those things we value. What to do with the things we don't value?
No, but why do you have them?
Who knows?
So, but no, but that's the point. So you can engage the ones that are of no value by getting rid of them. So that's the that's your service to Krishna. You know, purify your life, simplify your life. Yeah. So we're only holding on to attachment, but we can't actually say why we need it. You know, so then you get rid of it. Either you give it in charity, or it's junk, you throw it away, or, you know, or even sell it. Whatever, do something. But get rid of it. So you only have things that are of value. You know, even if you personally don't value, but you value something that it produces. You know, it's like say a job. You don't value the job, but you value the money that it produces. So therefore, you keep the job. Is that
one grihastha? He made a point that life is too short to become a pure devotee. But also, it's too long to remain one.
Too long to remain one?
To remain one. Means if in a short while we become, then life still goes on and then we degrade again.
No, but if you're a pure devotee, why would you degrade? We degrade but because of the impurities, not because of the purity.
Yeah.
So if you're a pure devotee and keep good association, what will be the problem? Because that's why the Lord performs his pastimes and all that that are going on. And all his associates are there. And, like, you know, Krishnas Kaviraj, I think he's in his 90s when he writes Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, you know, he's doing okay. Right? Like that. So then the point is this. It's not too short because it can be done in a moment. That's, you know, so 1/11th of a second. So as long as you have 1/11th of a second, you can become a pure devotee. You know, if you have 1/11th of a second, then maybe a little too short, but, you know. So then, that's, and then it just goes out as long as whatever it takes. So it's only how much we maintain our attachments to the material and not apply ourselves to Krishna, that makes this process go quicker or slower. So it's all based on desire. So you desire pure chanting, then that will come. If you don't desire, you desire, you know, Mercedes Benz or a motorcycle or, you know, whatever it is that you're praying to the Lord for, then that's the direction you'll move. Does that make sense? Because let's say you want a Mercedes. Why do you want a Mercedes? Okay? For what reason? So if it's just because you like cars that work very properly and all that, then you don't need as much money to have a Mercedes. Right? But if it's about the prestige and everything that goes with it, if you only have a Mercedes and nothing else, it still won't give you prestige. So to have the prestige, you actually have to have more facility and the more social and this and that, then the Mercedes has a meaning. So that will take even longer. You know, so we wonder why we're not getting effect, because what you want takes too much time. So yeah, there's too much. You could say life's too short to fulfill all your material desires. That you could say. But it's not too short to fulfill the spiritual, because that's the actual nature of the jiva. Right? And it's too long, you could say, to stay on the material consciousness, because it's just so terrible. But it's fine to stay on spiritual consciousness. Then you can do that eternally. So you just take what's there and turn it around. So, then present it back. But just present it pleasantly. Don't take it and shove it down their throat. That was the technique in the 70s. So. So.
We understand that working under authority, we have become under goodness, and that is offerable to Krishna. So now, suppose somebody is from most of the Kali Yuga, people are Shudras, so they are prominently dominated by ignorance. What exactly we mean by working under authority brings them to goodness?
What does exactly working under authority mean? What do you mean by exactly?
No, I don't understand how they can come into goodness, because changing nature also is a difficult thing.
But you're, now you're mentioning that Shudras, but don't Shudras always work under authority?
No.
So then what's the problem?
What does goodness mean? Come up to level of goodness. So they coming up to level of goodness. Means.
Goodness is by performing your duties, whatever duties you're supposed to perform. Because it's not the conditioned nature that makes you Krishna conscious or not. It's the surrender of the soul. Understand? That's what makes us devotees. Yeah? So you don't have to worry about the position.
The position is dominated by ignorance, so how is it related to goodness?
No, but what has that got to do with the soul? The soul identifies with it, then it's there. But if it means the occupation is controlled by ignorance, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? You work down at the lot where all the old, you know, junk cars, then you put into the machine that crushes them into a little block. And then, you know. So you're destroying things, that's using the mode of ignorance, but what's that got to do with you? Yeah?
Like Lord Shiva is handling with ignorance.
Yeah, that's good. He's giving example of Lord Shiva. He deals and controls ignorance, but he's not in ignorance. Does that make sense? You know, just like Krishna, he controls the material world, but he's unaffected by it. So it's the same principle.
And in some other places it says that Shiva and Brahma, they are tinged by it.
But are we worrying about a tinge right now? Or we're worrying about an overwhelming, you know, washed away by the tsunami of, you know, material life? Yeah, so, I wouldn't worry about that. Because that's just to prove that they're not the Supreme Lord. But to prove that you can be unaffected, then they can be used as an example. But that doesn't mean we become the Supreme Lord. We're still dependent.
Maharaj, in case of Lord Shiva's pastime with Mohini Murthy, Radha Govind Maharaj was telling that actually after taking the halahal, Lord Shiva takes the halahal, all his associates were thinking that he is the Supreme. Then to prove that he is not Supreme, then this Mohini Murthy pastime happens. And he is going with all the sages, proving that he is not supreme. He is also.
Yeah, because Bhagavatam mentioned it. Doesn't, I don't think it takes it back to the halahal. Maybe one of the acharyas.
But after halahal only this past time.
The sages continue. Dear Prabhu, a member of the twice-born classes is born with three kinds of deaths, those owned to the demigods, to the sages, and to his forefathers. If he leaves his body without first liquidating these deaths by performing sacrifice, studying the scripture, and begetting children, he will fall down into a hellish condition. But you, O magnanimous soul, are already free from two of your debts, those to the sages and forefathers. Now absolve yourself to the debt of the demigods by executing Vedic sacrifices. And in this way, free yourself completely of debt and renounce all material shelter. O Vasudeva, without doubt you must have previously worshipped Lord Hari, the master of all worlds. Both you and your wife must have perfectly worshipped him with supreme devotion, since he has accepted the role of your son. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, you have asked a question posed as an ordinary person, and we have answered according to ordinary scriptural rules. But actually, since you are the father of the Lord and a Nityasiddha devotee, you do not have to follow the ordinary rules of scripture. But if you think that you are only qualified to follow the rules of scripture, then listen to what we have said. O Vasudeva, you enjoy Deva, the treasure, Vasu of Bhakti Yoga. You have intensely worshipped Pra-Acharaha, the Lord, with most excellent devotion previously. Therefore, why should you now fall to the lower standard of actions? If it is not so, then our words mean nothing. The proof is that the Lord himself has appeared as your son. If you want to perform such lower acts out of humility and taking yourself as a fallen soul, do so just to teach other persons as the Lord does. Right? So in other words, you don't need to do for yourself. So therefore, there's no reason to do them. Right? So if there's no need, why would you do? But here, by his example, then others will be inspired, because he's in a prominent position while his performance of yajna then will have some effect. You know, like Yudhishthir, Marj, others. But for us, if it's not going to have an effect on others, there's no need to do that. Does that make sense? But the point is that we have these debts on the material platform. So if you've surrendered to Krishna, you don't have those debts on those, because he is the source of all these. Right? Then, what is it? The demigods, the sages, and the forefathers. So the demigods, then they're just acting on behalf of Krishna. You worship Krishna as taken care of. Right? The sages, then the knowledge the sages have come from Krishna. So you follow the knowledge coming in the parampara. And the forefathers, then they're there in the family line like that. But that's not the real connection of the soul. So when the soul connects back to Krishna through the parampara, then you've actually taken care of that. So someone nicely situated in that, all debts are paid. He only has to perform devotional service. So if it's part of your duties in your service, in your ashram as a grihastha, then those things are performed. But it's not that you have to perform them because of the material benefit you'll get or loss if you don't. You're doing them just as because of their connection to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Some devotees say that when you fully surrender, then you'll be absolved of these debts. Now you are not fully surrendered, so then you have to take care also like that. This. So is it correct?
And these are, they're wearing saffron or white?
Saffron.
They're wearing saffron. It's what do they want to continue taking care of that they shouldn't be, that they're using this as an excuse? No? And why do they say that?
They say that you should take care of parents also a little bit.
And so they're doing that a little bit. But the Shastras say you should only take care of your parents a little bit. So why a little bit? Who defines a little bit?
What their mind allows.
Means what, yeah, what they are comfortable with. So then, what does that got to do? Do they have brothers and sisters?
They individually have.
Yeah, so then why can't they take care? And if they say, well, they don't take care, then that's their business. Why don't they take care? That means their parents didn't train them. What goes around comes around. You want to be modern, these are the benefits. Okay, in other words, the Vedic system, that old archaic system and all that, means the parents then, you know, are taken care of by the children when they grow up, and they focus on spiritual life. They may either leave there at that time because they've detached themselves from it, or they might leave and go to the forest, you know, whatever works for them in their position. So, you know, but that old archaic system now, you know, is not seen as impressive. You want to use the modern system as much as you can. So the modern system is you die of old age in some place where nobody cares about you, and that supposedly, you know, you pay some money for them to take care, and that's your affection. Like when you go into these places, especially the more expensive they are, then they always say, oh, yes, you love your parents so much. They keep reminding you that that's why you're putting them here and they're charging so much money, because of love. So the whole point is that why aren't the brothers and sisters taken care of? Right? So then why don't they just move back home and take care? Or do their duties as a brahmachari. Now, if now and again they drop in, they, you know, encourage them in Krishna consciousness, take them some prasad or a book, that's not a problem. But if it's actually they have to take care, then, you know, then why aren't the others taking care? So in other words, the ones that should be taking care aren't, and the one that could be a devotee is not. So how is that beneficial for anyone? Nobody in the family will get any benefit. At least if he, you know, becomes Krishna conscious, then everybody else will get some benefit. So you have to balance it. It doesn't mean you don't keep contact and are pleasant. But it doesn't mean that they actually have an obligation. They don't. So they can't use scripture to only partially follow scripture. You know what I'm saying? Saying, oh, but scripture says you can do it. Okay, then do. That makes sense. Sukadeva Goswami said, after hearing these statements of the sages, generous Vasudeva bowed his head to the ground and, praising them, requested them to become his priests. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, hearing their words from verse 35, he made them his priests. He had a desire to benefit all people by sacrifice, charity, and showing the Lord Maha Manaha, or hearing the words indicating his good fortune because of Krishna. He chose them as priests. Right? So in other words, he's hearing, and because of Krishna, now he's doing. So in other words, it's Krishna's arrangement, or he wanted to, as a devotee, wanting to benefit everyone, then this is a way he can do. He thought, these sages request bhakti. That should be attained from persons like me. On the pretext of a sacrifice, I will have them attain Krishna's mercy. So then it's preaching. So then, the taking care is preaching? No, then. Thus it is later said in verse 49, Vasudeva's priests and the officiating members of the assembly, dressed in silk dhotis, yeah, and jeweled ornaments. This was before the Muslims came. And jeweled ornaments looked effulgent. So they were in silk dhotis. That means it's a, you know, being very fancy. Because if you're doing a yajna, it will get ruined. So you're willing to, you know, dress them all in nice silk dhotis and all that. That will get ruined. In other words, they're only for that sacrifice. Yes. Not that, oh, I gave him a silk dhoti and all that, now he'll have it forever. No, it'll last as long as the sacrifice. It'll get covered with ghee, burned holes in it, you know, ripped on something. That's how it works. So this means it's just by mentioning that and jeweled ornaments meant he took care very nicely of the Brahmins. You know, that's the principle. He took care of the Brahmins. He bowed his head completely, touching the earth, and praised them with verses. Right? And so they looked effulgent meant that they were satisfied. If things weren't going right just because they're dressed nicely, they wouldn't be effulgent. They're effulgent because it's all going well. One, they have their own brahmatejas, and they're satisfied with this. Otherwise, why describe their effulgence as priests? You would have just described it as sages. But as priests means they're satisfied with how it's going. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus requested by him, the sages engaged the pious Vasudeva in performing fire sacrifices at that holy place of Kurukshetra, according to strict religious principles, and with most excellent ritual arrangements. Right? Because it's being done, so you do it very nicely. So this just shows how nicely he follows the scriptures. But why is he doing that? To please Krishna, to engage the others in Krishna's service. So they know how to do these technical things. They do those technical things connected to Krishna. Are they not engaged? Right? Just like, let's say, okay, we're setting up for the festival and we have a lot of driving to do. So now, what would be your first choice? Who do you choose to do the driving? Someone who's good at driving, or especially if they really like driving. Now, they do that service, they'll do it nicely for Krishna, they get purified. So in their mind, they're just driving, but they're being engaged in Krishna's service. So in that same way, is that following all the excellent things and doing all that, those people that know those things, are attached to those things, so that's their area, then they get engaged in Krishna's service. So it works out very nicely. When Maharaj Yudhishthira was about to be initiated for the sacrifice, O king, the Vrishnis came to the initiation pavilion after bathing and putting on fine clothes and garlands of lotuses. The other kings also came. Right, so in other words, you bathe, you come dressed nicely. You don't show up in your shorts and t-shirts. No, but with your bead bag, of course.
But here they don't have bead bags.
They don't have bead bags, so they have to dress up. Okay, so if you have the bead bag, then... Yeah, okay, so then if you're looking at... Prabhupada said for the sadhu, if he has tilak, beads, and kopans, he's fully dressed in the assembly of sages.
Yes.
So you're saying because they don't have bead bags, then they have to dress more nicely.
Okay. And the
shorts would be like copens.
Okay. They always have bottles of water.
The bottles of water, okay. In the hand or in their pocket? Well, because you have the cargo pants, so you can stick it in the pocket. Depends on the size of the bottle. I guess you could have a backpack also.
To keep your beads.
Huh? To keep your beads, yes. Because you have the beads, but they're in the backpack. The other kings also came elaborately ornamented, as well as all their joyful queens. Right? So it's a nice festival, the arrangements are nice, therefore the queens are joyful. Otherwise, if it was not nice, they would not be joyful. As well as all their joyful queens who wore jeweled lockets around their necks and were also clad in fine garments. The royal wives were anointed with sandalwood paste and carried auspicious items for the worship. Mridangas, patahas, conch shells, bhedis, anakas, and other instruments resounded. Male and female dancers danced, and sutas and magadas recited glorifications. Sweet-voiced Gandharvis sang, accompanied by their husbands. After Vasudeva's eyes had been decorated with black cosmetic and his body smeared with fresh butter, the priest initiated him according to the scriptural rules by sprinkling him and his 18 wives with sacred water. Okay. Encircled by his wives, he resembled the regal moon encircled by stars. Footnote 8. Devaki was Vasudeva's principal wife, but she had several co-wives, including her 6 sisters. This fact is recorded in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Akuti had 2 sons named Devaka and Ugrasena. Devaka had 4 sons named Devan, Upadeva, Shutadeva, and Deva Vardhana. And he also had 7 daughters named Shanti Deva, Upadeva, Shrideva, Devara, Shita, Sahadeva, Devaki, and Dhritadeva. Dhritadeva was the eldest. Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, married all these sisters. But in this, Devaki, even though Dhritadeva was the eldest, Devaki is the main queen. Like that. But she'll be respectful to her older sister, you know, in their personal dealings. But as far as officially, then she's the main. So that means then she is the granddaughter of Ugrasena. Right? Granddaughter? 2 sons, that's sons. and four sons.
Daughters.
No, and he also had. No, Devika. So this means, huh?
Devika had the daughters. So.
Devika. Okay, so that means, yeah, grandson. Granddaughter.
Devika and Ugrasena are brothers. Second name.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. They're brothers, so it's uncle. Okay, okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. Takes people who work in the field to work it out. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura ki.